The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another UAB Director's Chair. He is the UAB Athletic Director, Mark Ingram. He's on the left-hand side of the screen here as you're watching our YouTube channel. And, of course, wherever you're listening, he can be on the left-hand side of the speaker if you'd like to have him over there, wherever you're listening to on the TKR radio app. This is a show not only about UAB sports, UABsports.com, but also about other athletic things going on. We like to pull the curtain back on college sports as we know it. And that's why we had Trent Dilfer on last week, which was a fantastic get. And thank you so much for getting him on. And I thought the three of us had great chemistry. It was great. I love having coaches on. And I love talking X's and O's, but there's only so far you can go with that. And I know while you're not a player or a coach, you can exercise your right to be well steeped in what it means to X's and O's and team play and stuff like that. So I can get your thought. But then I just love the fact that we can actually get further behind. So I'm really happy to have you on today to talk about this Dartmouth situation, because I don't know. Dartmouth, of course, as of last night, joined the SEIU Local 560 on a vote of 13-2. To join their first ever union, and the first college sports team to ever join a union. What does this mean? What is this mean?
Yeah, you know, the student athletes are claiming that they are employees of the university based on their requirements, that they don't have complete freedom of their time. They have to show up on time. And, you know, when you say it in a certain way, it can come across like a job, right? So if you say, well, Mr. Curry, you're on the basketball team. Does your coach, your supervisor, your coach, do they tell you what time to be here? Yes, they do. Do they tell you what to wear? Yes, they do. Do they tell you what time your shift practice ends? Yes, they do. Do you have freedom and flexibility of the rest of your schedule? Well, you know, I've got to go to school. So you're required to go to school. Okay. So you start getting these things where, you know, they tell me what time to be there. They tell me what I have to wear. They tell me what my job is. You're the point guard. Mm-hmm. That's your job. So that sounds like a job to me. And so by taking every, I guess, you know, picking apart every word of the law, that's what they're doing to claim that they're employees. And then the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, ruled in their favor. Now, Dartmouth, as you would expect, is appealing that decision and saying that the judge in this matter took some liberties that they shouldn't have. And I can't speak to that. I don't know enough about the case nor what they did or didn't do or what was said, but I've read that that's what Dartmouth plans to do and why. So, it's a dangerous place. We've talked a little bit about it here. If the student athletes become employees, first of all, I don't know what counsel they're getting and from who, but sometimes we get caught up in these things like, as competitors, let's go challenge the system and beat the system. Uh-huh. But you might be doing that at great peril, and you don't even know. You get caught up in it. You don't even know why you're doing it anymore, and to what end, and to what value. And I would just say that it'll be the detriment to many in college sports, and there'll be a lot of student athletes who used to get opportunities that'll stop getting opportunities. The Ivy League is unique in that they don't do athletic scholarships, so they don't feel this the same way you would if you were at. And by the way, this affects private schools differently than publics. So if you're at Vanderbilt and they're a private school, mm-hmm. and their student athletes decide to unionize, their scholarship right now is not taxable. So if they become employees and so they say, hey, we're going to pay you $50,000 to come to school here.
Taxes, yeah.
First of all, that's a pre-tax number. So now all of a sudden you're being taxed on the 50, and they say, oh, and you got to buy your, you know, you got to pay your tuition out of that.
Yeah.
And today, their tuition and other academic fees that are associated with their scholarship are not taxed by the IRS. So I just think it's an unwise move, frankly. And I think that it will cause more harm than good.
If you are, the vote was 13 to 2. If you're one of the two that did not want to unionize, you could still play, correct? Or is this like a regular?
They can all still play. I don't know. That's a good question. I say they can all still play. They're all, I guess they're still trying to figure that out. But I also read that this is a real challenge if they unionize for international students, because now you're dealing with international employment law, not just international student visas, which those are not easy to get, but we get them. Yeah. You know, we get those because they're temporary. Says they're going to come to our country and get a degree, and then they're going to go back to wherever they are, or they're going to, you know, file for citizenship or get work, temporary work visas, that kind of thing. There's a process to where that is set in place that's simpler for a student to come here.
Can we have different rules for different teams? I mean, so I'm assuming now that we're going to have, will we have some SEC teams decide they want to unionize? And if we do that, we will have some teams that are unionized, some teams that are not. They'll be playing each other. Some teams will be getting paid, some won't. Or does there need to be a uniform law across all sports or college sports?
Yeah, my guess is if there's a cascading effect and other programs unionize, that will turn into all student athletes, you know. And so
they'll have to. They'll have to vote on that.
Well, I think so. I think there's a lot of questions. Do you have to be an employee to receive some of the television revenues? So that's the other part, is this discussion around profit sharing or revenue sharing, excuse me. Most athletic programs around the country. Now, hear what I'm telling you. Most athletic programs around the country do not make a profit. Almost everybody loses money. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for their institutional support, it'd be a greater number than it is. It's just a farce that there's just all this extra money that we don't know how to spend. I can appreciate people saying, hey, well, you pay your coach too much. Well, you pay your coach based on what the market is worth. And so now that he's retired, I'll use Nick Saban as an example. You think there's any Alabama fan or anybody associated with Alabama? I mean, I'm sure there's people that say he makes too much money, but like the popularity of the institution based on the success and results of their football program are hard to argue.
He could have been making $150 million a year and it wouldn't have been enough just based on the economic.
But I don't know.
Just based on the economic impact for the university.
Yeah, I don't know what the number ought to be. I don't know what the number ought to be, whether it's 12 or 8 or 10 or 15 or 5.
Yeah.
But you know, the football program has made a significant impact. And so, you know, if you're a commoner like I am, like you are, like we, you know, the normal person, we struggle with these because there's such high numbers and it's so much greater than maybe what the rest of the world is making. It seems egregious, but you know, does Elon Musk make a number that he ought to be making or not? You know, there's a few people out there in the world that we don't live in a communist society. We're in a capitalist environment. And so he makes what the market bears.
Yeah. The money's got to come somewhere.
And I'll tell you how happy would the fans have been if he finally said, hey, I'm leaving and I'm going to go to this other place. Who will pay me more? They mm-hmm. wouldn't like that. So you can say you're not happy with what a guy like that's making until he leaves for another place that's willing to pay that.
As long as fans are willing to continue to pay the price and pay for everything from seat licensings to everything else to make this cog go. And it's funny because, you know, I remember I think I took my son to like a Florida football game. I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, the tickets were $75 for our pair of tickets. That was about as high as I was willing to go.
Yeah.
And we had a great time. I can't take my son to a Florida football game anymore. I can't. No. The tickets are $250, $300. I could, but I'm not going to. Yeah. Just by point and principle alone. And so there is this new thing now known as donor fatigue or fan fatigue, where fans are getting tired of having all the cost associated with everything that's going on in college sports. And forget about pros. We won't even go there. We know that works. But you know, and there's been several articles, and it's interesting over the last couple of days that you get these fans of these teams that have been, you know, fan clubs, and they've been part of they've had seat licensings and for years, and they've been a part of their families. And this guy from Penn State's had season tickets for 35 years. And all of a sudden they're asking for collectives. Now they're asking their fans to donate to these collectives.
Yeah.
And some of the fans are like, dude, I'm already paying a PSL. You know, I've been part of this for 35 years. I've been giving it till it hurts. My son goes to school here. I've done everything I possibly can do. And now all of a sudden during games, I'm being pleaded with to raise even more money for something I don't believe in. What are you hearing from the fan base? Are you hearing anything from the fan base as an athletic director?
It's competition. Like, you're competing with yourself. So now, you know, you had your annual fund, which you used for operating dollars. And then maybe let's say you're trying to build a new baseball stadium or renovate your arena like we are here with Bartow. Those are capital projects, but they're one-time things that sort of come and go. And now layer this in, and this is an annual need. This collective money is an annual need for these, to pay these student athletes. And donor fatigue is not a new term for people in fundraising, but what you have now is another source of money that we're trying to raise dollars for. And that's exhausting to, you know, for people to hear. It's tiring. I'll say this: fan fatigue or donor fatigue doesn't exist as much with the programs that win does with the programs that don't. And certainly, and when I say the ones that don't, if you're an 8-win football team, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. You got to be in the championship type program for people to not tell you they've got fatigue over it. Cause then they see the value in it, right? They see a results. They go, hey, look, you know, I spent this money on my, you call it a PSL seat license. It's your annual fund gift. I spent that money. I bought my season tickets. Hey, I sent my kid to school there. I even made a small contribution to the renovation of the whatever project. And then I gave this much money to the collective, and guess what? We won the championship.
Yeah. So,
proof's in the formula, right?
And I guess the only way it breaks is to finally say, you know, we stop having sellouts. I guess. I mean, I don't know, because I don't know how people afford it.
You want to go to watch the winners, though, Tony. That's what I'm saying.
True.
And sellouts at Ohio State are going to exist if Ohio State wins.
People that are willing to spend $3,000 to go see a woman break a record for all time points scored in college basketball. I guess I get it. I mean, if you got the money, that, like you said, we live in a capitalistic world. And if you got the money and they can get that, they can command that kind of money. And then, of course, you're throwing in these seat places, these hub, stub hubs, and all these things that are marking up everything anyway. It's just, and I don't want to be the boohoo guy person, because tickets are selling out. They're still getting, things are selling out. So there's still a demand there.
Yeah, there's a demand. But where I think is interesting in the collective space is how much do people want to continue to pay big numbers and not get results, right? Yeah. Or they, you know, the coach says to me, the donor, Mark, if you give this money, we're going to buy Tony Curry, and he's the best quarterback or point guard or whatever, and it's going to cost you this much money. And then you show up and you have a bad attitude, you're out of shape, you're lazy, you don't work hard, and you don't play that much.
Yeah.
Or you get hurt, which is not your fault, but you don't play. And then you get beat out, or you don't play as much as you'd like, and you transfer. So wait a minute, I gave a lot of money to that guy, Tony, and he was here for a semester and a half, basically, and now he's gone again? I don't know if I want to do that twice. So I think that there's real issues there. So finding ways that are creative, that are sustainable, to where it's not as painful, if you can figure out a way to generate dollars without having to go to your top 20 or 50 key donors, that's really an ideal scenario. You know, there's some collectives that have done branded, you know, beer or salsa or barbecue sauce. And if people buy that, now look, that's not going to yield you millions, but you know, if you have enough of those sort of things that sort of cobbles it together, that's a way to help generate some funds that people, it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah.
That's, to me, some things that we're trying to do in our collective to create an ongoing, you know, continued source.
He's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. Go Blazers. And of course, UABSports.com. Check out their website. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast. We had Trent Dilfer on last week, and we're working on getting Andy Kennedy on and perhaps getting both those guys on at the same time. So continue to listen up here. And UAB fans, get after it here. Mark joins us every single week here on the TKR app. Nick Saban was asked yesterday about his retirement, and it seems like he's enjoying that. And obviously he still has an office there at the University of Alabama, and he can still be asked questions. I don't know how often he goes in. But was basically said, told yesterday, you know, what was behind you actually retiring when you did? And it sounds like it was more of not a knee jerk situation, but he said, basically I was coming in and 70 to 80% of my players were asking me two questions. The two questions were, am I definitely going to play and how much am I going to make? And he said that was 80% of my players. And it sounds like he just got tired of it. It's just like, yeah. You know, he was so excited about bringing this football team back. And he's like, you know, whatever happened, wanting to be part of this family, wanting to be part of this institution, wanting to be part of something where not only are you getting a scholarship, but you're also getting 4 years of education, because we know that less than 1% are going to be actually playing at the next level. And it really was kind of a slap in the face. And I'm trying to think of anyone or anything that's ever left at the top of their game. And the first one I thought was Barry Sanders. I don't know why. Barry Sanders was one of the greatest running backs we've ever had in the National Football League. Was just knockout, just drag out, fantastic. Probably had another four or five years left in his body, and just said, "You know what? I'm done. You're not going to bring any pieces to help us win a championship here in Detroit. I'm finished." And we were just like, "What? I cannot believe he's willing to do that." And so it sounds like Nick Saban. Sounds like he got out earlier than he wanted to, but and he played it really well and said, "Listen, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just don't know what this new model of college sports is going to look like." Can you kind of talk about that as an athletic director at a major university?
Yeah, well, you know, same team as Barry Sanders. I think Calvin Johnson was the same way.
Yeah,
he's a receiver for the Detroit Lions, and I thought he retired incredibly young.
Way too young. Yeah,
you know, considering how much time he probably had left. And I think his whole thing was, I want to be able to walk. You know, mm-hmm. I've got plenty of money. I don't want to take a physical toll on my body anymore. And, you know, hey, good for him. You know, if that's what he wants, that's what makes him happy. I want to be clear. I don't know Nick Saban. I've never met Nick Saban. I don't want to speak on his behalf, but I read that article. And, you know, my view on him is he's sort of an old school guy, right? And I guess maybe I'm on the younger side of being that old school guy. But, you know, when you're having those player meetings and they stop saying things like, I think our team can be great next year, you know, when they stop saying those kind of things, it's not just frustrating, it's disheartening.
Yeah.
And those kids, by the way, are only doing what someone else has told them to do. They're doing what some adult has said, this is the way you do this. Leverage them. Leverage the situation as best you can. You get yours. You get what you can get. They got plenty of money. Go get what you can get. You deserve that. You know, and these kids are 19 years old. You know, they haven't proven themselves anywhere. They were good in high school, and that led to their recruitment. They show up in college, and they may or may not be good enough to play. They might just be big.
Sure.
You know, they might just be tall. They might just be fast. Look, if you're really, really fast, but you can't catch the ball, you don't have any value to the wide receiver group.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really, really big, but you can't move your feet, or you're not tough and you're not willing to engage with somebody, and you're not skilled, you're no good to the offensive line or defensive line. You're just big.
Yeah.
It means you eat a lot. You cost more. You know, so for a coach like him, and he's used to, hey, look, here's what I think our team can be. These are our team goals. What do you think, Tony? What do you think are our team goals? And their comeback is, well, how much am I going to play? And how much are you going to guarantee prior to spring practice, not earning, prior to me earning time through spring practice and evaluation, and then the fall camp and summer workouts, me showing you what I'm ready to do, what I'm capable of. What are you going to guarantee me? Because if you can't guarantee it, I'm going to transfer out. What?
Yeah.
And how much more money can you pay me? How much more money can you pay me to? Because I know I haven't produced yet, but I'm going to produce. You know I'm going to produce, coach. That's why you recruited me. Look, man, I'm telling you, 30% or more of your kids that you sign every year will never, ever, ever touch the field. Ever.
Yeah.
And so when you think about it like that, we only think about the Heisman Trophy winner. These conversations come up nationally, and that's all they talk about. Let's talk about the player of the year in the conference, the national player of the year, the Heisman Trophy winner, the whatever. Man, that's just like a tiniest fraction of fractions of people. The grand total of the people out there are not that person. They're just not. And but we make the decision. We've made these decisions based on that small group. And so, yeah, for him, he's, I assume, done very well with his finances. I assume he's taking care of himself. He's seems again like a guy that's buttoned up, that he knows where every penny is. And I don't say that to make fun. Like, he seems like so organized. Yeah, he's made good decisions, so he doesn't have to do it anymore. Why put yourself through that?
No, man, I just hate the fact that, just from a passionate standpoint, and the best analogy I can make is, I remember when they started doing the hurry up huddle, which was something that the Cincinnati Bengals actually started back in the National Football League years ago, and he just wanted to know, hey, listen, he's like, is this what we're doing here? Are we now taking the football and pimping it out every 5 or 6 seconds? Is that what we're doing here? Because there were a lot of penalties, obviously, that Alabama was a little behind because Alabama was not their style of offense.
Tony, these kids are starting to demand that you pay them to take a visit.
Yeah.
To take a visit. Mm-hmm. I got word from the NFL Combine last week in Indianapolis, that these guys are starting to say they expect to be paid to attend the Combine. Mm-hmm. This is your opportunity. You've worked your whole life for this opportunity. They only invite like 250 people to that combine, or 300. Yeah. You don't just get to go. If I declare myself for the draft, I don't just get to go to the Indianapolis, combine with all the scouts. This is my opportunity to show my worth and my value and why they should want me and meet them and show them my personality and that I'm a team guy and that I'm a rah-rah guy, and they'll enjoy working with me. It's a job.
Do you look back up? Do you, your father?
You imagine going on a job interview?
Well, I know, but
you're going to pay me to come on the interview?
We're talking 18, 19, 20 year olds. They don't know what they're doing yet. Where is this coming from? Is it coming from dads?
The guys on the backside, I still think they're being told this by a bad advisor, these guys are now 22, 23 years old. These are your back on the backside. But I think whether it's their parents, their uncle, their cousin, their neighbor, their high school coach, some mentor somewhere, is the person that they trust, that they've known a long time, is telling them this is how you do it now.
Is there a staff position? Has there been a staff position created for what we're going through right now? And that, as I say, Nick Saban's got to have, when he was coaching, there's got to be some guy he needs to check with. Okay, listen, I'm looking to recruit this guy. Tell me what he wants. So before I waste my time, I need to know what his demands are. Is there a position for that?
Yeah, your coaches are during the recruiting process being told now by coaches in high school, hey, look, unless you can pay him at least this much money, you're wasting your time. Mm. Unless you're willing to pay him this much money to visit, and the kids on their visit are not only are they demanding money, they're saying, look, I'm going to need, here's what I need. I need this many rooms, this much money up front. I need this much,
unbelievable
transportation cost. I need this for this many people. We're all coming, the whole family, and my neighbor's coming, my girlfriend, she coming, And they're telling us, they're not asking us, hey, Coach Curry, you think it would be okay if I brought my brother?
And I guess as long as someone's still willing to give it to him, I guess they can go ask.
Well, the rule allows for that now. Yeah. Well, the rule allows you to bring the entourage. Yeah. So I keep waiting for some kid to say, my whole high school team's coming. Mm-hmm. You want me? You got to bring us all. What?
Yeah.
And they're being justified in it. The talking heads and the former players out there, they're kind of applauding this ridiculousness.
info@tonycurryradio.net. We take emails here. Toby wanted to get a little classic rock and roll. Toby in Evergreen, Virginia. You know where Evergreen, Virginia is?
Man, I'm gonna look that up while we're talking.
Wants to know, he's like, I hear you guys talking about classic rock on every single podcast. He says, what's Mark Ingram's thoughts on jam bands? It's a good one. Do you like jam bands? You a fish guy or?
No.
Well, Grateful Dead?
No.
Dave Matthews Band?
Let me back up. I like some of their songs, but I don't want to go to a concert and just listen to somebody play the same thing for 20 minutes. And I can't do that.
Allman Brothers? They're known as a jam band.
They're not my favorites. Evergreen, Virginia is not popping up on the old. Oh wait, ooh, ooh, no. I don't know where that's at.
It must be a small burb somewhere.
Now Evergreen Avenue in Appomattox, Virginia. Now, Appomattox is where Robert E. Lee surrendered.
He sure did.
The courthouse in Appomattox, which was about 15 miles from where I grew up.
You got a little history lesson there. That's very good.
How about that?
So you're not into the jamming. So I would ask you the question.
I don't like some of their music, but I don't want to hear all that.
Yeah.
I don't want a 20-minute song.
You don't want a 20-minute song. There's a song called, I think it's called Space, that the Grateful Dead did. I went to the Grateful Dead played here. This is when Jerry Garcia was still alive. They played back-to-back nights down at the BJCC. And it was one of the weirdest. You're talking to a guy that's been to thousands of concerts. It was one of the weirdest concert experiences I've ever been to. Seeing the people get down in these little circles and these little fetal positions in the middle of the floor, it was just bizarre. It was just really strange. And then, of course, you know, there were so many smells and things floating around the air. It was unbelievable. Secondhand, you were going to get some, whether you wanted it or not. But then they played a song called, I think it's called Spaces, Space or something like that. And it's just a light that just basically just floats around the room for like 35 minutes. And everyone's just, it's like a cat watching a laser light, you know, for like 35 minutes, and everyone's just into it. And it is play. And the song is different every single time they play it. It's just, you know, sometimes it's 35 minutes long, sometimes it's 17 minutes long, sometimes it's an hour and 35 minutes long. But I to your point, I don't get it.
Well, if your mind has been altered chemically, it probably doesn't bother you as much. But that's my guess. Yeah, I mean, look, man, I like, you know, Uncle John's Band and Touch of Grey. I like some of their songs. I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to a show and listen to a guy play basically the same chord for like 20 minutes, the same little riff, like over and over and over again, while the singer goes backstage and takes a nap and comes back up with a change of clothes. And then the guitarist goes off, they take their nap, they come back up. And I'm just watching this one guy. And then the drummer's got to do his thing for
sure,
you know, until he's exhausted.
Def Leppard does that. Yeah. Like, with the song Rocket, it's like 17 minutes long. The Rocket song, 6 minutes long. They turn it into 17 minutes long. And I can tell you, I've been understage. I've been backstage when they went gone through that song. You don't want to know what they do during their break.
I think we all know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, they're doing everything. And I mean everything. Because they only have 3 or 4 minutes pop. If I'm going to ask you a question, because I know you're a historian at best too, because you get into these things. I mean, we just learned something about Robert E. Lee. Which band in your lifetime, dead or alive, that you really didn't give a rip about, but you'd go to their concert just to say I had to experience that concert? Like Barry Manilow. I went to Barry Manilow. I'm telling you, I like some Barry Manilow stuff. I didn't feel proud that people recognized me there at the show, but we all recognized each other. So we all had each other's stories with each other's backs. So we're like, okay, I'm not telling anybody you were here because you were here. But it was one of those things where I wanted to say I went to a Barry Manilow concert. I wanted to say I just because I wanted to know what it was all about, because I had heard it was amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people probably that could fall into that category that I would say that it's not that I don't think they're good. It just wasn't interesting to me. Their music wasn't like my thing. But I totally respect people like Celine Dion and Taylor Swift. And, you know, if I could have seen Whitney Houston or even like Beyonce, or, you know, I don't have really any of their music. I don't dislike their music. It's just not what I want to listen to all the time. But I would imagine that if I could go to their show, it'd be pretty great.
So if you had a chance to go to a Beyonce concert, you'd go?
Oh, I'd totally go.
Yeah. You'd be one of those. You'd be one of those people that shows up at concerts just for the evening.
Yeah. I just want to see what's going on. Yeah. It's going to be fun. Like, let's check it out. Yeah. But it's not the music that I would, you know, it wouldn't be my first choice song, but I'm guessing that the show is terrific and and their talent is off the charts.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just a matter of taste, right? It's just what your preferences are.
No, and I think Taylor Swift is turned into that show. Everyone I've talked to is like, dude, it's crazy.
I've seen her. I've seen Taylor Swift. Yeah.
Like, regardless of whether you like her music or not, it's just a spectacle. Incredible. Yeah.
It's a spectacle. And look, she's great. And I really respect her because she writes all of her own music, which I think is another super talent for a person to be able to do that. She plays instruments. I love that. Yep. You know, I went to a Justin Timberlake show. He was awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, incredible. And he plays guitar and piano, and he's a great dancer. And he's also really funny and engaging with the crowd. He's a terrific entertainer.
We've gotten emails from Todd before. We were running up against it, but I wanted to ask this question because it's somewhat topical. And the game was a few nights ago. It was really difficult to watch the second half. UAB against Memphis. I forget what I was doing. I was out running errands or something like that. And my son's like, dude, you've got to go watch the UAB Memphis game right now. They're up by 22. And I was like, really? And cause I know that they had beaten Memphis, you know, at Bartow Arena a week and a half earlier. And of course they beat FAU. And I'm thinking to myself, really? I said, I would have taken Memphis all day minus 8.5, just because I figured they were going to come back and have a revenge game at home. Yep. And then when I turn it on, they're up by 9, it's 61-52. Memphis had gone on a 13-0 run, and Andy Kennedy is not calling a timeout. Less than 3 minutes later, he's getting kicked out of the basketball game. And a Todd from Southside wrote info at TonyCurryRadio.net, did Andy Kennedy mail it in against Memphis? And I'm assuming he's saying there's this thought process that he was talking to his team and said, listen, you guys aren't listening, and if you're not going to do it my way, good luck. I'm not calling a timeout. You're going to have to work through it, because I was just waiting for the timeout. And I was like, where is the timeout coming from? It never came. And next thing you know, he wasn't even sitting in the bench. Can you tell me what the hell happened in that basketball game?
Yeah. And I got to be careful not to get a fine from the league over it, but I'll say that Andy intentionally got a technical foul to try to create a spark for the guys. There was just this, we just started the half kind of in a daze, you know. And so through that, he got a second one from a different official. So official number one, who he knew he was going to get a technical from, you can't charge towards an official and be demonstrative. And he was doing this, you know, kind of foul kind of motion to the guy, like, hey, he fouled him. You can't do that. And Andy knows you can't do that. He's not had a technical foul with us in his time in 4 years. And so he was trying to get his guys kind of motivated. And at the same time, while doing that, official number two also dinged him. Well, you get two techs and you're out. Yep. And so it just the way that it happened. But no, he wasn't mailing it in by any means. I mean, Andy's going to play to the bitter end. It was definitely a tale of two halves. I mean, you score 61 points in a half of basketball, you're out playing the other team in every possible way. You're out playing them. You're making the ball go in. You're beating them inside. You're beating them outside. You know, you're backdoor cutting them, wide open layups and dunks, and you're making shots, right? You're making shots. And there's plenty of times in the second half where we just missed shots that if you make the shot, you stop the run, mm-hmm. you know, that in the first half you made. So I don't think anybody thought we could continue that sort of progress. Like, you're not going to score 122, you know, in the game. I don't think anybody would have thought that. But, it was definitely a dramatic turnaround.
March Madness right around the corner. We're in the month, and it'll be here before you know it. We're super looking forward to conference championships for both men's and women's. And of course, go to uabsports.com for all your information. And Mark, thank you so much. We'll catch you next week, brother.
Yeah, man. Sounds great. Now listen, if they win tonight at Temple and come home and beat SMU on Sunday. Now we play Sunday, 2:00 against SMU right here. If we could win those two, we end up fourth in the league, which gives us a double bye in the conference tournament. So we got a lot to play for still, and looking for the big things out of the team. So thank you guys. Appreciate you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.